Real families, real farms, real food. Welcome to Arizona Agriculture Connection with Maricopa County Farm Bureau. My name is Nicole Clements, Executive Director, and I'll be your host. Maricopa County Farm Bureau is the voice of agriculture in a community that thrives on the dichotomy of urban and rural agriculture operations. This podcast is a home for farmers, ranchers, food lovers, prospective agriculturalists, and those looking to connect the food on their plate with the farm that it came from. As we take an inside look at agriculture in Arizona, we will delve into topics like ag technology, policy, food preparation, and everything in between. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform with new episodes every Wednesday. Arizona Agriculture Connection is hosted by Maricopa County Farm Bureau and sponsored by Paloma Ready Mix and Materials, a proud supporter of agriculture and our communities. Be sure to subscribe and share your favorite episodes with your friends. For more interactions, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, at Maricopa County FB. Now let's discover some Arizona agriculture.
Welcome back, Arizona Aggies, to another episode of Arizona Agriculture Connection. We are a day late, but never a dollar short, because we are coming to you live this week from Washington, D.C. So we're actually out here visiting with the American Farm Bureau's ACE Conference for the Women's Leadership Program, and I've had the pleasure to hear our guest speak yesterday and just knew that we had to come and share her story with you. So we are here for the International Year of the Woman Farmer, and I am pleased to welcome Ms. Ale Aguirre, who is here, and share a little bit about your story and being a woman farmer, not only here and doing research and science, but also from Chile.
Hi, first of all, thank you for having me here. I'm so flattered to be considered for this important podcast. To be honest, I am a farmer back in Chile. As I mentioned yesterday, I grew organic blueberries that it was export produce. I exported to the US, Canada, Asia, and Europe. And I also grew hydrangeas. So not only I grew fruit, but also flowers, which I must say it's my favorite crop. We exported those hydrangeas to several countries, including Russia, that is very far away, and it was quite an experience. This is a family business. We own family farms back in the central zone of Chile in a little small farm town called Coinco. And we have a family operation there that right now is mostly being grown with alfalfa and some other crops that are for family usage or friends usage or like not for export or sale. Alfalfa is our main operation now.
And where is that alfalfa crop going? Is that feeding local livestock?
Yes, local livestock. Believe it or not, now in Chile, it's like a big trend to have like outdoor weddings. So a lot of alfalfa bale, at least the beautiful ones, go to weddings. Yes, but mostly for cattle feed.
That's so funny. So alfalfa is actually one of our number one crops. A lot of our listeners are tuning in from in Arizona. So it's very interesting. We're feeding a lot of local dairy farms.
Incredible.
With our crops and feedlots. But so I want to kind of dive in a little bit. You're joining us here today in Washington, D.C., but actually currently you're in Virginia.
Yes. Currently I'm a researcher at Virginia Tech. I'm finishing my master in science in forestry and natural resource economics, and I also have a bachelor in science in agribusiness management and finances, and I'm researching for an agricultural project. So it's very funny that my project is in the environmental school, but it's absolutely agricultural. So it's quite of a stretch, but I'm working right now on a project that is called the Southern Native Seed Project. This is targeted on the Southside area in Virginia, mainly on historically underserved farmers, veteran farmers, and beginner farmers to transform native seed production in a commodity crop. Why is that? Because, Virginia, it's one of the top 10 states in the U.S. losing farmland to solar developments, which is a very hot topic now, just like data centers and stuff, hot topic. So the thing is that here's a new market. Apparently, solar panels tend to be more effective when they have plants underneath them. And you know that they are very disruptive for the ecosystem, for the wildlife there and everything. So the thing is that we're a lot of counties are lifting regulations to restore underneath the panels with native plants from the area or around the solar development. So we kind of saw here an opportunity because there's a gap. There's a lot of demand for native seed for restoration purposes. There's not enough supply. So there's the gap that we want to fill, and we want to develop this market for these producers to be able to diversify their crops that are mainly soybeans, tobacco, corn, so they can diversify it a little towards native seed and have more income during the year. And I am in charge, I am doing it's my thesis, the financial feasibility analysis and the economic study about it on native seed production adoption. And it's because I'm the money girl. Things needs to be profitable. And as a farmer, I know how important it's to make them profitable. So I'm very, very excited about this project because I think it's going to be something very important in the region.
It sure sounds like it. So how does that work that you're doing translate into the future of your farm?
Well, first and foremost, native seed production is something that I would like to adopt in my farms. I think that in Chile we have, Chile is the biggest Latin American partner to the U.S., not only in agricultural trade, but also in research. So for us Chileans, we have a lot of similar methods to you, and we use a lot of similar practices, but we're still getting there when it comes to research. We're still getting there when it comes to restoration efforts or to have the conscience that you guys have here in terms of taking care of what's happening. So I would love to translate native seed production in my farm in the future, and I would love to be able to apply all the knowledge that I've gained here, in terms of, because I was a farm manager, but academia was never on my books. It was a middle-age crisis. That's how I ended up here. Regular people get cars. I wanted a degree abroad. And okay, I have an amazing husband that manages his company. So he was able to come with me with our kids, the dog, very important. And he was able to come here with me. So I would love to be able to apply all the knowledge that I gain in terms of financial feasibility analysis and economic analysis and develop that over there, and hopefully develop some research collaboration between both countries. That it's definitely on my future. I'm a bit of overreacher.
Sounds like a great So I know you mentioned yesterday you didn't start out as a farm girl, but you fell in love with it.
Yes.
So can you share a little bit about what your journey kind of started at and how you got to be this incredible international woman farmer?
Oh, well, I always say that I'm a farmer by accident and by passion. It's funny because for me in the U.S., it's like, oh, no, but you are a bachelor in something, but you are a master. No, first I'm a mom and a wife, then I'm a farmer. And then all the degrees that can come after that. I went to business school in Chile. In Chile, this is a fun fact, we don't have an agribusiness degree. So either you go to business school like I did, or you go to agronomist. You're an agronomist. So for me, business school made the most sense because I'm a businesswoman. And so I was always, all the time I was raised in Chile capital, in Santiago, a big city. My family is, my biological family is from the city. They had nothing to do with farms. But my high school sweetheart was raised in a farm. He's my husband now. We've been together for a bunch of years since we were 15. And the first time he took me to his farm on a weekend or whatever, I hated it. I'm sorry. I hated it. I saw a spider that it was the size of my head. And I was like, honey, I love you. I'm not coming back here again in my life. Little did I know that I was going to end up falling in love with those farms, with those lands, and with that important job. A few years later, it was an unexpected pregnancy that it's my first son. He's a teenager now. And my husband always said that he didn't want to raise it on Santiago. He wanted his son to grow up like he did, you know. His father was one of the first Chilean exporters of apples to the U.S. And he was a civil engineer, so it kind of runs in the family to do different things than what you're trained for. My husband went to law school. He ended up growing alfalfa. We're a very particular family. And so he wanted our kid to have the childhood that he had, you know, on the tractor, with the horses, with the dogs, you know, running around between the workers. And he wanted that. And for me, it sounded like a perfect childhood. So when I say, okay, we're moving, and I was leaving my beautiful apartment in Vitacura in Santiago, I ended up in a farmhouse. I didn't know what to do. And my mother-in-law, that it's like, it's my mentor, and for me, it's like my mom, gave me a call, and she was like, I need help urgently. The person that was working with me for the international audit to be able to export on the blueberry patch just dropped, left. It's not coming back. And I have the audit in 2 months. Oh. If I don't pass it, I don't export. And I was like, okay, and what do you want me to do? I don't know what is a plant. You know, like, I can literally kill a cactus. And she was like, I need you to learn. And I was so, like, it was a new thing. I was bored living in a new place that it wasn't a very funny place. My neighbors were like 30 cows, so it was not a fun place. I was like, okay, I need to do something or I'm going to go bananas here. And she taught me everything I knew. And after that first week of training, I fell in love with the operation. I fell in love with the people. I fell in love with the plants, with the process, with how much it took to put a blueberry on your plate. And that's how everything started. Then she had an injury on her spine. So in the middle of the season, I have to take care of the whole farm by myself. We're talking about around 7 tons of blueberries that we exported every year, not even counting the local market. And that's how it started. And I put up my big girl boots, my farmer hat, and I was like, okay, let's do it. And that's how I learned.
Do you find that having that mentor really kind of set you up for success?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my mother-in-law and I were the first female producers in the area. And not only that, we were the first organic certified producers. So besides being the crazy ladies, we were the tree huggers. So that definitely shaped something, you know, like I was told so many times that what I was doing there, I was told by many men, like, I don't need to speak with the secretary, please call the owner. And I was like, so I had to learn. She taught me how to make room in those spaces. She taught me how to earn respect, but no fear. And she taught me the importance, and this is something that it's very deep in my family, the importance to value the people that works with you, because those are the people, that's the community that is going to be with you when you have a hard season. And that's why I mentioned yesterday that the importance of building that community, and that it's something that she passed on to me. So yeah, her mentorship was crucial.
I think as we see the shift, and I, you know, I kind of feel it. So especially in Arizona, we're in the United States, we have the highest percentage of women farmers at 48%.
In Arizona, did you know that?
So
congratulations.
We're very proud of that. And I think in this year, especially where we can kind of take the room to celebrate, you know, things like that, it has changed a little bit. You know, when I was a young girl growing up on the farm, the attitudes were a lot different than they are now, and things are changing. And I think it's just great to share those stories and be able to maybe inspire the next young woman who wants to start her own operation or be a part of something. And I think for me, that's what's been so great about being here and sharing that this week with almost 450 other women who are here with us. So kind of maybe switching gears a little bit. So how has your kind of relationship with agriculture maybe influenced the next step or the next career path? Like, what does it look like for you next when you're finished with your research and you don't have to worry about your thesis all night?
Oh my gosh. I'm defending on November, so.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. To be honest, I think that agriculture has shaped the woman that I am. And I always say that I decided to choose this path also because it allowed me to have my kid with me all the time. You know, we're in counter season in Chile from here. So whenever you guys are in winter, we're producing. And for me, it was important to have my kid. I only have one at a time, to have my kid with me in the flower packaging process, in the blueberry harvesting process, having here with me, like being able to have lunch at home, being able to be not that busy on the winters and be part of all the school activities. And so for me, agriculture plus motherhood definitely shaped what I am today. And it developed a passion that it's going to be translated. Okay, so the thing is that, as I mentioned yesterday this, and I really think that research must benefit producers. And for me, that bridge is super important because I've been in both sides of the aisle. So that's what I think that my plan is for the future. I want to be able to bridge that research towards producers because the initiatives must be realistic for producers. As I mentioned yesterday, it's not just, okay, let's buy a drone, let's buy this new AI tractor, let's change our equipment for this new smart stuff. It's not like that. We know it's not like that. We know that this is a fact that it's kind of scary, but out of every dollar that it's spent in America in an agricultural product, the farmer gets 15 cents of the whole dollar. And I really think that research needs to start benefiting the farmer to the point that those 15 cents becomes 20, becomes 25, and the farmer needs to be a part of the vertical chain of production. With that being said, that's the bridge that I want to do. And that's what I think it's my mission.
Well, we love to hear that. When we talk about our different agriculture commodities that we have in Arizona, and we share the story, you know, with consumers. So like when you're buying a package of blueberries off the shelf, what you don't really necessarily think about what it took to get it there, right? So maybe what is a fact or a statistic that you would want consumers to know about the blueberries that they're buying on the shelf?
Well, it's very important to know that in a lot of farms, blueberries are picked by women. Women tend to be way more I used to work only with women, actually. And during the harvesting process, during the package, it was different. Women tend to be very delicate. For every blueberry that you're eating, that little gray thing that you see outside is called the bloom. And the only reason that your blueberry has that bloom, that it's filled with vitamins, antioxidants, and a lot of properties, it's because that person picked your fruit with enough care to not take the bloom with his fingers, or with her fingers. And that is very important. Every blueberry that you eat was picked by hand. I know that in California, there's a lot of like robots harvesting blueberries, but that's not the reality of many farmers, not here and not in South America either. So every time you pick up a little box from the shelf, it's good to think about how long did it took to pick this little box. You know, who picked it? They did it by hand. They did it with care. So your fruit could end up in the shelf with a great taste and definitely a lot of properties. So that's what I wanted to know. Like, I was that person that literally thought that lettuces grew up almost on the grocery store shelf. So for me, the fact that and see my kids being so connected with who grows the food that they eat, it's very, it's amusing. And it's, I love it because I think that we should start connecting, especially children, with what they eat. Where does that come from? With who grew it? Was it a family? Were they working on their summers? I think that's super important.
So we work really hard to share that message. So in Arizona Farm Bureau and across the country, but our Ag in the Classroom team goes into schools and helps, you know, share the story of the farmer with kids, which is really great. But we always kind of revert back to, in America, the average consumer is 5 generations removed from the farm. So they don't know. They don't have even that experience of going like to their grandparents' mm-hmm. house on the weekends who are farming. You know, maybe yes. they've never seen a cow in person ever.
Like in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of what we think is so important about just sharing the stories. And yes. how do we share that, you know, in a broader level, which is what brought us here to the podcast. We're so grateful that you agreed to be on. So with the alfalfa crop that you mm-hmm. guys have, is that how many cuttings a year are you doing?
Normally we have, I've never been in charge of the alfalfa. That passed from my husband to his little brother, and he's doing a fantastic job. Thank you, Sevi. But we have around 5 or 6 cuts a year. And you know, alfalfa lasts for a couple of seasons too. So around 5 or 6 cuts a year. Of course, the first cut, it's never the same quality that the ones that follows, but yeah.
So in Arizona, we do about 10 cuts a year.
Oh, that must be the weather.
Yes. Ideal alfalfa weather.
Excuse me.
So what is maybe the biggest difference that you see in agriculture between Chile and America?
I will go first with the first similarity. In Chile, we're having a lot of labor shortage problems, and that's something that I see that it's happening and that it's trending. We see that our own people, they don't want to do that job. And it's becoming very hard for farmers because we don't have a program like H2A to bring farmers from abroad. So now the government's kind of working on that. So first similarity, labor shortages. Main differences, I would say that we still are for our bales, are rectangular. Big difference. And I would say that here in America, you guys have way more women farmers. Like, I see that now in Chile, we're seeing way more women standing up for their farms. But historically here, like, you have this female power in the farms, that it's something that I would love to be seeing translated there. And all the amount of money on research that it's here, like, for example, the women's survey, the women farmer survey and everything. I'm a data lover because I really think that data allows you to make informed and good decisions on time. So I would love to be, we don't have a survey that it's targeted on female producers in Chile. And I would love to be able to gather that data to do it. Like, I was a consultant in the Patagonia. Yes, I've moved quite a few times during 2 years in a project in Puerto Varas. It's a beautiful project. It belongs to one of my very good friends. She's an incredible woman farmer. And it's a biointensive regenerative market garden. And just like that project is blooming, a lot of new regenerative market gardens are blooming that belong to women. And that's the data that I would love to see. How are we preparing our female generation to take care of the crops, of the farms, of this? So we are a little behind when we see way more male representation down there than we see here.
I think one thing that a lot of maybe women don't think about when they think about maybe having a career in agriculture is, and I think it was mentioned yesterday, but our ability to multitask and be efficient and just do the dang thing.
Exactly.
Like, I can't ever remember a time when I thought, I don't think I can do that. Like, I'll figure it out. And I'll do it while I'm keeping the books and cleaning the house and taking care of everything. And I think that just ability to handle it is something that women don't feel like is a superpower, but I think it really is.
I think it really is.
Especially when it comes to agriculture, because we talk all the time about, you know, anyone in agriculture is wearing 10 to 15 different hats a day, right? And who does that better than a woman? And just logistically, it's just having a knack for something. And I really hope that more women see your story and others and say, yeah, I really can do that.
And you know what? For me, when I got pregnant with my first kid, a lot of people was like, you just ruined your career. Like, I was in business school. I was about to start an internship that I have been offered in Microsoft. It was like the dream. And I got pregnant. And that's when we decided to move to the farms. And for me, it never destroyed my career. It built it. It built it because being a farmer allowed me to work with my kid on the back, to work with my kid sitting with me and teaching him how to prepare the flower stems to be packed to go to different countries very far away. I think that, as you say, women can wear many, many hats. And I think that the empathy that we are able to feel, not only with the people that works with us, but also with the crops that we're growing, with the nature that's surrounding our operations. We're kind of normally used to manage a budget in the house. That's how we ended up managing budgets in our farms. Women tend to be better bookkeepers than men and tend to be more cheap when it comes to overexpense. Yes, I said it. And I'm not regretting it. But so a lot of women are very good at bookkeeping and budget keeping and wearing these like 15 hats. So for me, I really hope this female empowerment that we're seeing, it's translated in agriculture in the future, in this new generations of little girls that don't come with them, like don't bring with them this kind of challenges that the women before them used to carry. I really hope to see that empowerment translated in women feeding the world. You know that in Spanish, the word, like when you say veggie garden, you normally say huerta, that it's a female word. And it's because usually in Spain, females were in charge of the family garden and feeding the family. And that's how I see it. We're feeding around 40% of the world. I mean, 40% of the labor force, of the farm force, are women now. Let's keep it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story and taking the time this morning.
Thank you so
I know it's
much.
Kind of early, but we just really appreciate the opportunity to tell your story to our listeners, and I hope you keep sharing it, and we look forward to keeping to share stories.
Thank you for having me. This was amazing. I think that I spent so much time thinking that my story was not worth to tell until someone told me that if it inspired one person, it was more than enough. So keep it up.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Ale, for being here.
Thank
we really
you.
Appreciate it. Best of luck on your research and your thesis and whatever the future holds for your journey through agriculture.
Thank you so, so much. Best of luck. And you're doing an amazing job bringing stories towards people. So
well,
thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for taking the time to listen with us today at the International Year of the Woman Farmer celebration here in D.C. Stay tuned next week for another AgReport update.
Thank you for tuning in today. And remember, Farm Bureau has a place for you. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with your friends on socials. You can also visit our website, MaricopaCountyFB.org, for more information and to submit a topic you want to learn about. Remember to tune in every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts. A huge thank you to Paloma Ready Mix and Materials for supporting our agriculture producers and this podcast. Maricopa County Farm Bureau, bringing you the stories of real families, real farms, and real food. I'm Nicole Clements, signing off. Catch you next week.